Okay, peeps, today, first episode of The Kung Fu Genius, we will be talking about the conversation between Bruce Lee and his student Daniel Lee. Lots of gems, lots of Lees, lots of stuff. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. Watch out.
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Well, welcome to the first episode of the Kung Fu Genius. I am the Kung Fu Genius, a.k.a. Alex Richter. And with me, as always, DJ Dre in the
DJ
house.
DJ Dre.
So welcome to the new podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to talk a little bit about my old podcast, Dudes of Kung Fu. As most of you know, Big Sean passed away quite suddenly last month. And for the longest time, we actually both wanted to do our own separate podcast, but we would still do the Dudes. So the idea is that the two of us would record Dudes of Kung Fu together. And Big Sean wanted to do something called the Jeet Kune Do Blueprint. And I was going to do the Kung Fu Genius podcast. And that would allow me to talk about topics outside of Wing Chun and Jeet Kune Do, which is why it's perfect that our first episode is about Bruce Lee, right?
Yes.
I have my own podcast now. What am I going to talk about? The same shit I would have talked about had Big Sean still been around,
exactly.
Right? So this was something that we had planned on doing for a while. And also want to let you guys know, for those of you who are Dudes of Kung Fu fans and joining us from there, is that I will continue to do the Dudes of Kung Fu podcast, but I'm going to do it live on Facebook. Usually about every 4 weeks, about every 6 weeks, something like that. We'll always make an announcement. So rather than me thinking that I can carry on the podcast the same way that it was before, we'll make it like more of a community of the Dudes of Kung Fu fans, and we'll do it together. And that way you guys can join us and you guys can write in, and we can make it like kind of almost like a meeting. You know, every few weeks, the Dudes of Kung Fu fans get together and chat some Wing Chun and Jeet Kune Do. The first one, by the time this podcast comes out, will have already been done. And, definitely for those of you joining us from Dudes of Kung Fu, I definitely thank you for that. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Mm-hmm. So a couple things. We have a new podcast studio here at City Wing Chun, but it's not finished. As you can see, we don't have all the soundproofing up.
Yeah.
So if sound's not 100% perfect or things are not exactly in a, the crystal clear way that you expect from a podcast that I've done, just wait a little bit. We'll upgrade it. And so everything is going to be perfect. So for the first episode, I actually want to do, which is funny, we're talking about, the whole reason of this podcast is to do something a little bit different from what I did on the Dudes. And so, of course, it makes total sense that for the first episode, this is actually something that I wanted to do with Big Sean.
Okay.
I had mentioned to him a while ago, what about this phone conversation between Bruce Lee and Daniel Lee?
So it's a pretty famous conversation.
I think it is among Jeet Kune Do circles, right? Because okay. For me, it's actually my favorite piece of Bruce Lee media, because it's the only time Bruce Lee talks where he's not playing to the camera or he's not playing to the media. If, most people when
keep
they...
it at 100.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Most people when they listen to, Bruce Lee, like the lost interview with Pierre Burton, Bruce knows he's in front of the camera.
Oh,
he
knows.
Yeah, yeah, so the whole, be water, my friend.
Yeah.
And he even gets up and does that reverse punch, and he's like hoping not to offend any camera angle, right?
Hey, yeah, he knows where the cameras are. Yep.
He's very well aware of where the camera is, right? And most of the other conversations with Bruce Lee, like the Alex Ben Block interview and the Ted Thomas, which are all...
aware of it.
They're all on YouTube. They're phone conversations. And that was during the time when Bruce already started making movies in Hong Kong. He's aware that he's talking to the media. So you're getting Bruce with all the spit shine and everything on that. I mean, he's very polished. What I like about this conversation is this is the only conversation with Bruce Lee where he's just being Bruce Lee, because he's talking to one of his students.
No polish. Yeah.
No polish at all, right? And he's just talking to one of his students. And here's the thing, from my sources in the Jeet Kune Do world, which shall remain nameless, what I understand is Bruce didn't know that he was being recorded for this conversation. And I heard that later when he found out, he actually wasn't that happy about it because, he felt that, at that time his star was rising. He had just made his first two films, and which would, I think, put this phone conversation either late 1971, early 72.
Okay.
And he didn't know that he was being recorded. So I think he was a little salty because I think he felt, I don't know if he felt betrayed, because I think his relationship with Daniel Lee was pretty good, but maybe he would have preferred to have known. Now, the beautiful thing is, He doesn't say anything like, you know, that he didn't put his foot in his mouth, or he didn't say anything like horribly offensive or anything like that. But it's really Bruce Lee.
Which we all have a capability of doing. Right?
Exactly. If you heard that someone recorded a phone conversation with you a few years ago, you'd be like, wait, with who? Wait, when was that?
What did I say in this comment? Yeah.
And then we're going to release it on YouTube. Yeah. You might be a little bit worried, right? But Bruce doesn't say any such thing. As a matter of fact, I think this is the only time you can listen to Bruce Lee in a way that gives you the impression of, like, if you were Bruce's friend, mm-hmm. and you were just sitting having a conversation with him over a coffee or whatever, this is kind of what it would be like to talk to him, because he's unfiltered. He uses the language that he would normally use. I mean, he's not dropping tons of F-bombs.
Okay.
Maybe one or two.
Right.
But it's much more unfiltered. So you get kind of a feeling for what he was actually like, much more so than you'll get from the Pierre Burton interview or something like that.
And this begs the question for me, the Daniel Lee student. I never heard of Daniel Lee, and I need to know something.
Right.
Who is Daniel Lee?
Well, I'm not the expert on all of Bruce Lee's students. Yeah. So there are other people out there who are far more qualified. You could maybe talk to Richard Torres or talk to a bunch of other Jeet Kune Do experts out there.
I'll give him a call after this.
That's right. So I'm not the guy who knows all that stuff. But from what I understand, Daniel Lee was a Jeet Kune Do student of Bruce Lee's in the LA period. So not from Oakland and not from Seattle, but we're talking about like the latter half of Bruce Lee's teaching career. So, and I believe that before he learned from Bruce Lee, he had experience in boxing for sure. But I believe also in Tai Chi as well. And I know that later Daniel Lee also taught Tai Chi. So I don't know if he had learned that Tai Chi before he did Jeet Kune Do or after or during or whatever. But he was known. He passed away a few years ago. He was known as a Tai Chi instructor as well as a Jeet Kune Do instructor. And there's a famous photo of Bruce Lee doing Chi Sao with him. I think he might have been blindfolded as well. So so Daniel Lee was one of those LA period students. And you can imagine Bruce had been in Hong Kong for less than a year at this point. He made Big Boss, which was, you know, a movie made for almost no money and became a huge hit.
Yeah.
I think no one was more
overnight
surprised.
Overnight success.
Than,
yeah.
No one was more surprised than Bruce Lee. And then, according to the phone conversation, which knowing the way we talk about things, the phone conversation is about 20 minutes long. And just knowing the sheer amount of stuff there is to talk about in this phone conversation, we're not even going to get to the movie stuff, because that's a little bit more in like the middle or second half of the conversation.
May have another part of this.
Yeah. So for our, you know, for our listeners out there, probably to get through this entire 20-minute conversation, we probably need like four or five episodes, because there's so much to unpack. At everything that he says, you just stop and there's tons of stuff to talk about. And also there are a lot of things that some people might not know what he's referencing and stuff. So there's just like tons of stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, it's interesting to kind of hear the things that he says. And one of the things that I love about this conversation, it's the only time I believe where you can actually hear Bruce Lee describe his own movies.
Ooh.
You know, not written or not his ideas or his script, but he actually explains like what Fist of Fury is about. And it's interesting because you get to hear like what his impression was. And it's super, super, super interesting. But
the artist going over his own art.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And
this is rare.
The first part of the conversation, which is, I think, where we're going to spend most of today's time talking about, is he talks about this Tai Chi fight. Well, he actually says, we haven't even explained it. You already start laughing, right? Okay. Look, I have lots of respect for Tai Chi guys or whatever.
The visuals are so funny.
Exactly. You imagine, well, first of all, it's not two Tai Chi guys fighting. One of the guys was a Tai Chi master, I believe in the Wu style. And I think his name was Mgong Yi, something like that. And the other one, his surname was Chan. And I think he was a, which is Chan, by the way.
Yeah.
And he was a master of some kind of white crane kung fu or something like that. So I don't know I know that at some point, I think there's a website out there that breaks down why the fight happened and all that stuff. So before people yell at me and be like, no, the fight happened because of this. Like, it's been a few years since I read those details. And so I'm not claiming to be the expert as to why the fight happened. But it happened in 1954. And what you have to understand about 1954, at that time in Hong Kong, they did not have fighting contests in Hong Kong. Because they were illegal.
I can imagine.
Yeah, fighting contests weren't even legal in Hong Kong in any way until maybe 1967, 1968.
So where did they do this fight?
Well, they did it in Macau. Right?
Macau.
So Macau is basically the Vegas of Hong Kong. Now, so Hong Kong was a British colony at that time, and Macau was a Portuguese colony, but it's an hour boat ride away. So it's still Cantonese people in Macau, but Macau has all the casinos and, you know, they have all the houses of ill repute with excellent reputations. Yes. Right?
So when did they have legal fighting in Macau? Like this?
I think
since the time they opened Macau.
Because Portuguese law was different. So I believe, and you know, I'm sure there's someone out there watching this who knows better than I do, but I believe that part of the reason why Kung Fu contests were illegal in Hong Kong is because a lot of the Kung Fu schools were also somewhat tied to triad and mafia organizations. So in order to kind of tamp down any activity that might be considered like as being somewhat gang or mafia related, they just kind of had a blanket, like no martial arts contests. In fact, I don't think you, besides doing street performances, like, you know, maybe breaking bricks over your head or something like that, I don't even think you could have formal martial art demonstrations in public in Hong Kong at that time. I mean, maybe they had it, but I don't think it was fully legal because Chinese martial arts were really frowned down upon by like the most of Hong Kong.
This is why I love the underworld.
Yeah, which is funny because we think about, like, when you think about Kung Fu, you think about Buddhist temples and, you know, being a good person and, you know, all this, like, you know, martial virtue and all these things. But the reputation that Chinese martial arts had in Hong Kong, especially through the 50s and 60s, was actually really low. And it wasn't until there were certain changes that happened in the late 60s, and then, of course, certain films started to kind of bring it more to the forefront, and the attitude changed in the late 60s.
That's why so many parents were like, no, you can't do the Kung Fu. No,
right, man. And it didn't necessarily have to do anything with, like, they didn't want them to fight, but maybe more with the fact that these schools were, and there were certain schools of martial arts in Hong Kong, which were directly related to triads. I mean, Grandmaster Yip Man, you know, by all accounts, was not a triad himself. So Wing Chun didn't necessarily have that reputation, although there's some people who called it Gangster Fist because many...
Gangster Fist?
So I've heard that. I've never actually heard anyone call that in Hong Kong. I read that somewhere online. But the idea was that, you know, some young boys who wanted to learn how to fight found some good success with Wing Chun, right?
Going to learn Gangster Fist.
Gangster Fist, right? But there were other schools of martial arts, particularly certain branches of Bak Mei, White Eyebrow, which were one-to-one directly related to the triads. this kind of perception changed over time, especially in the late 60s, early 70s. But anyway, to kind of circle back to this fight, for whatever reason, these two masters decided to have a challenge fight. And the challenge fight was going to be televised, all right? And again, this is 1954. They were going to have it in a boxing ring, and they did it in Macau. So they did it like a big event. When you look at it, when you watch the video, and by the way, for those of you who want to see the video, you just go on YouTube and type like Tai Chi versus White Crane fight, okay?
Guess we can leave a link in the YouTube.
Yeah, and be prepared for absolute comedy. I mean, the fight is ridiculous, okay? When you watch it, we'll get to that. And I think the entire fight between the Tai Chi Sifu and the White Crane Sifu is worthy of its own Kung Fu Genius episode. So beyond what Bruce Lee talks about it today, which we'll discuss, we got to do like a full Crime Faces breakdown of how terrible this fight was.
Shout out to the Crime Faces. We will.
By the way, if you guys don't follow Crime Faces on Instagram, pause this right now and follow them and then come back and
smash,
keep listening,
that
okay?
Like button.
So, anyway, Crime Phase is awesome. Bruce Lee first mentions at the beginning of the conversation, like, oh, did you see the Tai Chi self-defense, right? And at first, the first time I heard this, which was years ago, I didn't really know what he was referencing. But as it goes on, it's pretty clear that he's most likely talking about this 1954 fight. Now, in 1954, Bruce Lee was 14 years old. So he may or may not have seen it on TV if it was televised when he was 14 years old. But it seems that in 1972, which is already almost 20 years later, he had maybe gotten a hold of a reel of this fight, maybe through his connections in the Hong Kong film industry. Somebody's like, hey, you want to have that Tai Chi White Crane fight? I have a reel of it or something. And maybe he had sent a copy of it to his boys in Los Angeles. I don't know. But here's the thing. If he's not specifically referencing the fight that I'm talking about, whatever he's talking about looks remarkably similar to the fight that I am referencing, right?
Gotcha.
So I'm, let's say I'm 90% sure he's talking about the master, the Wu style Tai Chi master versus the White Crane master, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, let's talk about the first part and then we'll go from there. Okay. So let's see here. I'm both doing the podcast and managing the audio. Hi. Here we go.
Self-defense. So all these self-defense is there, I mean. Well, I hate to tell you this and that is, I mean, if you were there with plus a fallen friend sitting next by us watching the box of bay toys, we will be so embarrassed.
Okay, so let's just talk about that first part right there. So he's like, oh, did you see that Tai Chi self-defense or Tai Chi fight, right? And, you know, pretty clear that in the fight, there was not a lot of Tai Chi or Kung Fu or whatever going on, right? And what he says there is very interesting because, you know, obviously Bruce Lee was someone who was very pragmatic, very Western, very modern, but he was still Chinese and still very proud to be Chinese.
Yeah.
And so the specific wording that he uses when he talks to Daniel Lee, who is obviously also Chinese, is, you know, if you were sitting in the audience, all right, with one of your presumably foreign, let's say non-Chinese friends.
Okay.
And you were watching this, and the term you use, guok sut bei choy. Guok sut bei choy means, guok sut means national arts. And it's a euphemism for martial arts. There are a few terms in Chinese that mean martial arts, most famously, mo sut in Mandarin is wushu, you know, wushu, right? And mo sut just means martial arts. Okay. And obviously, kung fu, which doesn't directly mean martial arts, but it's pretty much used to mean Chinese martial arts. But guok sut means national arts. And the national arts of China are martial arts.
Martial arts,
but
okay.
I believe the reason why he used that term is because he's trying to invoke a little bit of patriotism on Daniel Lee's part, like saying like, hey, you're there with your non-Chinese friends in the audience watching this national arts competition.
Ooh.
You would be really embarrassed because, you know, and we'll like I said, we'll do another episode where we show the fight.
How does the phrase go again? What he said?
Guok sut bei choy.
Guok sut bei choy.
Perfect. All right.
Oh wow.
I cannot decipher you from a local. It would be exactly the same.
So right? You wouldn't be embarrassed by that.
Yo, not at all. I wouldn't be embarrassed by your Chinese. I might be embarrassed by the fight though.
Oh no.
So for those of you who have not seen the fight, and like I said, we'll do another episode just on the fight, and we'll show it in all its crime faces glory.
Oh.
It is akin to two children who really don't know how to fight, kind of wailing away at each other.
Ooh, maybe you will, 3-4-year-olds.
Yet you'll occasionally see some posturing and some movements in between. You know, some, like, okay, for lack of a better phrase, kung fu looking stuff.
Something an 8-year-old would do.
Yeah. And then the moment they start fighting, it's just swinging for the fences. There's no defense. There's no footwork. There's no nothing. And it's kind of a hot mess. So now let's continue here. So right there, because a couple things that he talks about there. One, obviously, he mentions Joe Frazier, which
he is a boxing extraordinaire.
Yeah, like, I mean, Bruce Lee was a huge boxing fan.
Yeah.
And not just Muhammad Ali, as many people talk about, but he was pretty much aware and up to date on boxing. And this conversation was in 71. So I believe Joe Frazier was still
champ,
the heavyweight champ at that time, right? So he's mentioning Joe Frazier specifically because he's still, I believe, the heavyweight champ. And also because, you know, Daniel Lee says, it just looks like a free brawl. And then Bruce Lee's like, no, actually, it doesn't.
No, it does.
A free brawl, meaning like, you know, someone like Joe Frazier is a brawler. Mm-hmm. But he's talking about a trained fighter that uses brawling as their style of fighting, right? So there are a few different types of styles of fighting in terms of striking. You have people who are, you know, outboxers and swarmers and brawlers, so to speak, and infighters and stuff. And so, you know, Joe Frazier could be categorized, I suppose, as a brawler, right? But he means an intelligent way of being a brawler, yeah. You know, someone who's actually trained.
Now, Tyson would probably be a brawler in that sense, no?
I don't know. I think he was a little bit more technical. I think he was much more of a boxer, but he was also very powerful, which I think gives people
comes
that,
off brawly, though.
comes off brawly. So
it comes off that way.
So anyway, I think it's interesting because it's almost like Bruce doesn't want these guys to be put on the same pedestal as like an actual trained fighter, because it's pretty clear. These guys might be remarkable in their ability to perform the forms of their style, to do white crane, you know, they can do all the forms, they can show the applications, the other Tai Chi guy might be really great, but it's pretty clear that the two of them have zero experience fighting in the ring. And it's clear pretty much right from the beginning. There are a couple things. First of all, they're fighting like children with no defense. The other thing that's pretty clear is one of them, I believe, the white crane guy, got decked right in the opening. I don't even know, the guy comes out, bam, punches him right there. And the other guy, he literally grabs his face like, you just hit me in the mouth.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, it doesn't matter whether you get, I mean, if you're a professional fighter, you're going to get hit. This is something that happens, right?
It seems as if in that moment he thought being hit was impossible.
Exactly, right? Because probably in his training, he never actually did any kind of his students, you know, lob a bunch of softballs at him and he Tai Chi's or white cranes the shit out of that move. And they can't.
Confused.
Yeah, like, and they can't do it. I mean, and it's also like, look, if you practice sparring, of course, the goal is not to stand there and eat a bunch of punches to the face. But if you get hit in sparring, you're like, oh, that's part of fighting. Yeah. That, like, it happens and you keep going, right? Yeah. But the look on his face was like you almost felt if he was wearing white gloves, he would have then, at that point, taken off the glove and thrown it on the floor. Okay, now it's on, right? You know, because it's not the fact that he got hit or even got hit hard. It's the fact that he clearly had never really gotten hit before that way.
Clearly.
So you realize he doesn't have, outside of his martial art, because there are people who are really great exponents of a martial art, and they're also really good fighters, but maybe they're not good fighters because of what they learned in that martial art. They might have instinctually been really good fighters, or they might have been a fighter before they learned their formal martial art. So it's almost like the martial art they learned really didn't have a lot of bearing on their ability to fight. And it's very clear that,
kind of like me,
it's very clear that outside of that guy's, I assume, his white crane prowess, he had never fought before. And so what you see that is you just see a disorganized kind of melee, not really a brawl, right? And so that's what, you know, Bruce Lee references here. And then he says, look, when a boxer goes in with their two hands, they go in there determined. They have a game plan. And that's the other thing. When you watch these two guys, it's not just that they fight like a bunch of kids, but you don't see any tactic, right? There's no like game plan in there. Like, oh, I'm going to cut off the ring, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to stay away from that. No,
it makes me think of that famous Tyson saying, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Exactly. But I think in this case, they did not have a plan and they got punched in the mouth. Right. So, all right. I didn't have a plan before I got punched in the mouth, and now I got punched in the mouth. All right. And that's kind of what we're looking at, right? And so, you know, it's quite terrible to watch. I mean, the fight is really a hot mess. And so anyway, when he makes the comparison to boxing, saying, yeah, those guys who are just boxers, they have two hands, but they go in there with determination, and they go in there with practice, and they go in there with confidence and experience. Meanwhile, these two kung fu martial artists, or Tai Chi, whatever you want to call them, they probably have hundreds of techniques at their disposal from their forms. You know, they have all these movements and all this great stuff that's in their forms, but they have no experience in how to use it. And when they go in there, you see that they don't really know how to implement their tools.
And what's strange to me is they must have been like master level in their field.
Right.
Hence how many people were at this event.
Right. Although
it seemed like it was a lot of people.
No, it was huge. I mean, it was like it was in a ring. It was it was outdoors. Yeah. It looked like it was sold out. And right. They even had some demonstrations before with the Eagle Claw Master, Lao Fat Mang, all these guys. Right
before the fight.
Yeah. So it was like a big deal, right? They had an announcer. I mean, like, you know, I don't know if it was the Chinese version of Bruce Buffer, but it was someone, right?
Yeah.
And it was a pretty big deal. I don't know if that's because those two guys were really famous. Mm-hmm. I think you just have to imagine in the 50s, this is post-war Hong Kong and post-war Macau. So the economy, you know, Hong Kong became one of the tigers of Asia economically, but we're talking more in the 60s and 70s where it started to become this huge economic powerhouse.
Right.
But in the early 50s, it was still relatively depressed after the Second World War. Mm. So I think the reason why it was so well attended is because TV was kind of a new thing.
Okay.
And here's a chance to watch two Kung Fu masters. You probably only heard of Kung Fu.
And this was televised live.
I believe it was live. At least it was televised. And, you know, it was kind of a chance to watch, like, hey, you read about Kung Fu masters in novels. Maybe you saw a couple Kung Fu movies with Quan Ta Keng, right? And now here's a chance to see two real Kung Fu masters.
This is probably the first televised fight.
Yeah, maybe wasn't boxing or something like that, right? And I think that the audience had an expectation that these two guys were going to go in there and you were going to see
something
back and forth, and you were going to see this intricate trading of techniques, and there was going to be all this crazy kind of back and forth and all this smooth looking, you know, stuff straight like out the of a Kung Fu movie, right? Yeah. And instead, it's just a disorganized melee of hot nonsense and hot garbage.
Piping hot nonsense.
Piping hot garbage, right? Yeah. But one thing I have to say, the fight is not boring. You know, it's entertaining, that is true. But perhaps not for the reasons that they had originally intended.
For all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, for all the wrong reasons, right? And so I think that that's kind of why it earns its place kind of in the history, is just being this kind of... this real hot mess express of a fight, right? And I think that it wasn't at all what people expected, right? And there's another thing that he says right there at the end of that last clip that I played.
Mm.
And I have a theory about this, and I want to know if you agree with my theory. And whether you agree with it or not will largely determine whether you stay my podcast partner or not.
Right. We need to see what this theory is.
So my theory is, he says something at the end there, which is very interesting. And he says, you know, those son of a bitches are cowards.
Yes,
he did. Turning their heads.
Now, he did say this, yes.
When I heard that, it immediately made me think of something else that Bruce Lee had made reference to in all the years.
Mm.
And so that was his famous fight with Wong Jack Man. So Wong Jack Man, as everyone knows, you know, I believe it's around 1964, happened in Oakland. And, you know, basically the fight had nothing to do with Bruce fighting for the honor of teaching non-Chinese. That's a bunch of hot nonsense. It had everything to do with the fact that Bruce Lee essentially insulted a majority of the Chinese martial arts community of the Bay Area at a demonstration that he gave at the opening of a film.
Blatantly, yes.
And so, you know... The local Chinese martial arts community had felt like Bruce Lee was saying a lot of, you know, brash things, or, you know, was trying to offend them or whatever. And then so finally they had found someone to go and fight for their honor. And this guy that they found was Wong Jack Man. And Wong Jack Man famously showed up to Bruce Lee's school in Oakland, and they had a relatively short fight. You know, Wong Jack Man came and he, you know, first proposed a number of rules for the fight. And then Bruce was like, no, we fight with no rules or we don't fight. Mm-hmm. And then Wong Jack Man, you know, purportedly reluctantly agreed to that. And then they had the fight. And famously, if you look at the fight on paper, I mean, Bruce Lee, you know, one, he had street fighting experience.
I love how you say it's on paper.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you look at it on paper, because there's some people now, they're like, oh, the controversial fight. There is no controversy. Okay. The only thing is that maybe it didn't look as smooth or as cool or what you expect Bruce, because it's a real fight. We're not talking about the final scene from Enter the Dragon. We're talking about an actual fight between two people who are trying to hurt each other. Right. So of course, if you could see a video, if there was a hidden camera all the way back in 1964, and you can watch this exchange between Bruce Lee and Wong Jack Man.
If only.
You probably would be like, that doesn't look like the Bruce Lee. That doesn't look like what I think of Bruce Lee, right? And that's not to take anything away from him. It was a real fight. No real fights look great, okay?
Yeah.
Unless you have a massive difference between the skill levels of the two fighters. So when you see someone who just looks phenomenal, normally you have someone who's got real fighting skill, maybe fighting someone who's three pegs below him, mm-hmm. right? So he's able to kind of show more stuff. But if you have people, you know, who are a little bit closer in level, it's going to look like a fight, okay?
Yeah.
And so what we know from what Bruce Lee wrote about in letters in the years after is he always referred to Wong Jack Man as the runner, okay? And so the story was, I mean, there are many takes on it, right? But basically, you know, Bruce stands there in his zhongshao and, you know, Wong Jack Man gets in whatever his position is.
I see where you're going with this.
And,
yep.
You know, as Bruce, you know, in a very kind of basic Wing Chun way, you know, tries to storm forward using chain punches, using a very aggressive frontal assault, so to speak. Wong Jack Man, he doesn't back away like the way a boxer might. He literally turns around and starts running. Okay? He's not shuffling backwards, okay? By all accounts, he literally starts running. And Bruce cannot advance and just do an advancing shuffle step and chain punch him. Bruce literally has to start running while chain punching. All right, so you have to imagine, if you could go and watch this video of the fight and you're thinking of Bruce Lee, you know, giving this like real fast kick or whatever, and you're like, oh man, that guy's totally badass. And then you see a fight of him and it's literally a grown man chasing another grown man around a very small kung fu school while one guy's running away and the other guy's hitting him on the back of the head and, you know, come back here, right? And then Wong Jack Man, and this has been talked about in a few different accounts, while he's running away from Bruce Lee, he kind of turns and looks over his shoulder.
Oh, yes.
And he scratches Bruce on the neck, all right?
Yes.
Which, I don't know, when I hear that, I go like, oh, man, you punk. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's running away and he scratches him like a kitty cat, right? Yes. And of course, you know that his students are not going to say like, oh, this is, you know, they're not going to say, oh, this is a scratch done out of desperation.
No, they're that going was a to technique.
Say, yeah, this is the reverse iron claw technique from the 14th Lohan form or whatever, right? Instead of what it really was, is a desperate attack by a man who's trying to save his life, right?
Oh, man.
And then so he scratches Bruce on the neck, which I can imagine bothered Bruce while he's running away. And then basically, Wong Jack Man trips on a little ledge that's in the back of the school. He trips and falls down.
Yeah.
And Bruce, who's chasing him like a maniac, also trips and lands on top of him. And then starts punching him on top and says in Cantonese, Lei fo m fo a, which is, do you give up or not? Mm. Right? And what's interesting about that is the reason why I know he said Lei fo m fo a
is sort because of like uncle, yeah.
Yeah, it's like call it's like uncle. Say uncle, right? Is because Linda Lee, his wife, his widow, she was there.
Mm.
And she told the story, and mind you, she's Caucasian, she's not Chinese. And when she tells the story, she says, yeah, and then he got on top and then he said Lei fo m fo a.
And she knows it, yeah.
Yeah, she knows it because she was there, but also how would she know that specific Cantonese phrase if it didn't happen?
Yeah.
You know, that she's on top and says, you know, that Bruce Lee says, you know, Lei Feng Fong. And then
probably was like, what did you say to
exactly,
him?
Exactly, right? And then Wong Jack Man gives up and that's the end of the fight. And then later Wong Jack Man goes to the newspapers and then, you know, very similar to, you know, some famous fights in Wing Chun between various grandmasters and stuff. You know, the fight happens, someone loses, and then immediately after the fight, there's an excuse. I slipped or the guy sucker punched me or whatever. Right? It's always the same thing, right? And well, of course,
I used the talent of death on him,
and I gave Bruce the death touch, and he'll die at age 32 in the apartment of his mistress or something like that, right? Yeah, I mean, like whatever kind of ad hoc excuse, post hoc excuse they're going to give years later, right? And so, I think that, and in all the letters that Bruce wrote to some of his students who were there or around at that time, he always referred to Wong Jack Man as the runner. And you could tell that it was something that bothered him. Because he would even say like, oh, for that guy to have fought me and to have not been punished seriously, you know, always bothered him. And so now we flash forward about 8 years in the future. He's having this conversation with Daniel Lee. And the one thing that really rubs him the wrong way about this fight is when those guys are turning their heads and backing up. Because I think he's having like PTSD flashbacks of Wong Jack Man running away from him and thinking like that is the sign of a coward who doesn't have fighting experience. Mm. Because, you know, for better or worse, I mean, you know, there are people out there nowadays like, oh, Bruce Lee never fought in MMA, in MMA in the 60s and 70s. I always find it really funny where you have these like kind of MMA bros.
Because MMA is all over the place.
Yeah, MMA. MMA's been around for my whole life. Yeah. Dude, you're 18 years old, okay? and so no, I remember history, when there was no mama out there. And, you know, so of course, if you look at what was the dominant competitive martial art in the 60s, it was point karate. And Bruce Lee found point karate like the biggest waste of time and completely futile because it's basically like tagging. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I tag you and if this thing was a real hit, it would have knocked you out. So I get a point. But it's almost like it's light to no contact. right? And so for Bruce, who came from Hong Kong and had actual scraps with other kung fu, you know, practitioners of other styles, and let's not forget,
off the records and that one Bruce, on the record
fight. Yeah, Bruce Lee had a real legitimate boxing match at age 18 versus
is this guy's name again?
Gary Elms.
Gary Elms.
Yes, yes. Man. Shout out to Gary Elms.
Shout out to Gary Elms.
Yeah, but he passed away a few years ago.
Oh, no.
but he Gary Elms was like, you know, they had a number of high schools in Hong Kong, and they had they would compete against each other in boxing. And so Gary Elms was like the current champion in, like, I don't know, the intra high school boxing, whatever. Right? And then Bruce had just, I think maybe he had a couple fights to earn that spot, but then his big fight was against Gary Elms for the championship or whatever. And I think it was 3 2-minute rounds. And Bruce put a clinic on this guy, but not like something, not like, we're not talking about like what we saw last week with Max Holloway in Calvin Kattar. It was like, not that at all. Okay. I'm talking about like this guy, you know, Bruce just swarmed him. And according to, if you read, there's a great Bloody Elbow article called Requiem for a Fighter. And it talks about the Gary Elms Bruce Lee fight. And that's where I got most of the information from.
Okay.
And it says that Bruce basically used a mixture of boxing and Wing Chun. And so Bruce just starts laying into the guy. And one of the things that was the result of the fight, I think one of the reasons why Bruce had a great respect for boxing, which you can hear in this, in the audio here, but also why he felt it somewhat limiting, is that the big boxing gloves took away a lot of the sting of his punches. So he's there punching the living crap out of Gary Elms.
I'm trying to figure out like, what ounce do they have?
Well, maybe 10 ounce, yeah. But you know, when you're 115 pounds soaking wet right. And now you have some pads on your hands, that makes a huge difference, right? If you're Brock Lesnar and you could have a 20 ounce glove on and he'll knock everyone out, right? So, you know, you have these, and he's just swarming Gary Elms.
We're not talking him.
You know, when you think about Bruce Lee, you think about like versus Chuck Norris and moving back and forth and doing all this kind of stuff. That was not his style as a boxer. Even Dan Inosanto said that Bruce's style when they would spar was a lot more like a brawler.
Okay.
Then, you know, this kind of very smooth, not to say that he didn't do that, but like, you know, when it really came down to it, he would swarm and hit, which I think obviously has a lot to do with his Wing Chun training. Because that's basically the idea. You go in there, constant pressure, chain punches or whatever. Now, if you swap out chain punches for, you know, jab, cross, uppercut, you just keep going in. That's basically the same strategy, right? And so one of the things that bugged him was that he couldn't knock Gary Elms out, but he knocked Gary Elms down, I believe, 3 times, 1 time each round. And won the fight. It was a unanimous decision, but it wasn't a knockout. And I think that pissed him off, right? Right? Because I can imagine he had had some street fights before where he put some people down, right? And here he couldn't put this guy down, right? I mean, he could put him on the floor, but he couldn't knock him out.
Apparently Gary Elms was really good, champ.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was, right? And also, so, I mean, wow. He was, you know, he was non-Chinese. He was a Westerner, for a Chinese, you know, for a scrappy Chinese kid to, you know, beat a Guai Lo in a boxing, which is kind of a big
deal.
That's
what they call me when I go to Hong Kong.
That's Guai right. Lo, yeah. I can imagine that the audience was really like all on Bruce's side because, it's like, yeah, beat up the British guy, you know, because they're the occupiers, right?
Oh, no.
So I'm sure that, you know, they were very happy about that, right?
Shout out to the Brits. Awesome.
So you know, that was kind of a big deal. But you have to imagine that, okay, so by the time Bruce Lee had fought Wong Jack Man, he had his, you know, scraps on the street in Hong Kong, and he had had a legitimate boxing match. And by all accounts, there he is fighting someone in the boxing match who has experience. And Bruce didn't back down. He just went in and did his thing. So he's someone who's like, hey, if you're going to go in there and fight, even if you lose, you know, face the guy, put your hands up and go for it, right? And, you know, and you know, don't turn your head away and try to claw the guy with the iron claw and
it
certainly
seems
don't run.
Though he was in a lot of fights that were skillful people, that he was able to use some skill, and he was pissed about this whole fight of no skill fighting.
Yeah.
And
well, I also think, because it comes back
cowardice.
I think it comes back to the Wong Jack Man thing, right? Yeah. Because Wong Jack Man is also supposed to be a martial arts guy of high skill or whatever. Right. But when it actually came to the fight, you can imagine that Wong Jack Man's actual fighting skill was probably very similar to this White Crane guy. And here's Bruce Lee, who has legit fighting experience, and this guy's just running away from him. And it's almost like they have a saying in Chinese called "Mang Kun Da Sei Lo Si Fu," which is the wild punch that knocks out the old master. Okay. Oh, now, Bruce Lee didn't get knocked out, but the idea, it's a euphemism for beginner's luck, saying like sometimes you have a very highly trained person and then it's like the beginner that doesn't know stuff, doesn't know jack, and accidentally punches him and knocks him out. Right. Ouch. And so that it's called like the blind or wild fist that knocks out the old sifu.
Never heard this one.
And it means in Chinese, you use it to mean beginner's luck.
Okay.
All right. And but that's kind of it. So I think that Bruce Lee felt that Wong Jack Man, from a fighting perspective, was beneath him. And then when he watched these two guys fight, I feel that he was having flashbacks of Wong Jack Man kind of, you know, swatting his fists around and running away and feeling kind of salty about that, right? And being like, you know, don't put these guys on the same pedestal as boxers.
No,
right?
Fighting heart.
No fighting heart. So let's continue here.
Yes.
See, he's saying even an amateur boxer, you know, regardless of how amateurish they are, or they still go in there and do their thing. But you're not seeing that in this fight. You're seeing two guys who are essentially, they're scared. I mean, most people are scared when they go in the ring.
Yes.
But people who have fought before, they can channel that into what they need to fight. And these are just people who are just essentially overcome by their fear and they don't know what they're doing. So then we continue.
But whereas most guys go out there, they haven't decided what the hell they're going to use. I mean, before they contact each other, they do all the fancy stands and all the fancy movements. But the minute they contact, they just don't know what the hell to do.
Yeah, and again, that was the idea, like, between these phrases of nonsense fighting, they're there, you know, doing this and like,
hands.
You know, okay. Doing their kung fu stuff, right? And then the moment they fight, it's just like this melee. And it reminds me of like, you know, sometimes Jackie Chan in some of his old movies.
Yes.
He would like, if he was supposed to be in traditional kung fu, like the fight choreography would be pretty generic, like punch, punch, you know, duck, kick, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as he finished what was essentially like a 10 phrase of very generic punches and kicks, then he would finish it in some kind of cool stance and you'd go, oh, it's snake style, or oh, it's this style, right?
Yes.
And it's kind of like, in the kung fu world, you go in there and throw a bunch of rotten ass childish punches. Ugh. But if at the end of it you're there in a very cool zhong sao or a very cool position, they go, oh, look, he's doing kung fu, right?
Oh, no.
And it's like, the kung fu is not the hand position in between the actual fighting part. The kung fu should be the fighting part. All right. I would be much more impressed if he just stood there like an idiot at distance. But when he got in there, knew what he was doing.
Cool.
Then he's got all this cool looking stuff at distance. And then when it actually matters, you don't see any of it. Right. So let's continue here.
Yes, please.
I mean, that's it. That's good. Yeah. They fell on their asses and they tuck and hold and grapple. And I mean, the whole Hong Kong, they call it
So yeah, and first of all, he talks about how by the second round, I think the fight was over after the second round because they were gassed out.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's another reason why I'm pretty sure he's referring to the 1954 fight, because it was only two rounds.
Okay.
Right. So because at the beginning he says, did you see the Tai Chi self-defense, right? Which sounds like it's a demonstration, but I think he meant this. And also only one guy, to be fair, is a Tai Chi guy, and the other guy's a White Crane guy. And to be fair to Tai Chi, the White Crane guy looks equally bad. As a matter of fact, I think the White Crane guy is actually worse. The Tai Chi guy, I think he's the guy who lands that first punch that comes out of nowhere. Pow, right? And so, but then he talks about, like, look, they don't have conditioning, right? They didn't go, like, not only did they not have a plan for the actual fight.
They just threw it out the window. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like they didn't even train for it, right? Wow. And then he's also, and you see that they end up grappling, right? But he doesn't mean, like, actual grab. He means clinching.
Yes.
But clinching in the way that two beginners clinch, not in, like, you know.
Two cowards clinch.
Yeah, not talking about, like, you know, the guy's has a tie. You know, a Thai plum, or the other guy's got like underhooks. He's not talking about like formalized grappling. He means like
technical stuff.
They're clinching out of desperation rather than out of tactic or out of kind of some kind of refined or polished technique, right?
Yeah.
So let's see what else he says.
Hong Kong,
yeah.
Can you imagine that? I mean, even those guys see it that way.
Oh yeah, and then the phrase that he used, he said, like, even in Hong Kong, they basically called it, and the phrase that he uses, and I might not have that 100% correct, was something like two boys fighting in a sandbox, you know, or like in a playground, right? Wow. Meaning that you're not looking at two masters fighting, right? You're looking at two kids fighting in a playground. So it just looks like crap, right? Wow. And he said that's how they described it in the Hong Kong press.
Falling apart at the seams, yeah.
Right, and you would expect that the Hong Kong press wants to be a little bit on the side of the Chinese martial art guys because they don't want to say like, oh, look at the best of our martial arts. Looks like a bunch of, you know, hot garbage in the ring, you know, because obviously people can see two high-level boxers and see what that's supposed to look like and then watch these two kung fu masters go in there and do, you know, the average person with no martial arts skill, I think, would look more or less the same.
Yeah, I can't imagine being a reporter at this time.
Yeah, so he's saying even the Hong Kong press, which should be kind of like on the side of these guys, like, you know, maybe saying like, you know, I always thought that the narrative might be something like, you know, well, these are two high-level masters, so they're naturally going to look a little bad against each other because they're such high level. But that's not actually what goes on. What you see, it's just a bunch of garbage. Mm. You know what I mean? And so they don't even say that. So he's saying, like, even Hong Kong guys are not on the side of that, right? So you can imagine how bad it is. So here we go.
I mean, what do you think of the appreciation of people here?
Yeah, right.
Well,
period.
Yeah, so he's saying, like, you know, if they don't even like it there, what would you think if you showed this on TV over here? What would people think about it? You
so know he's in the States, Daniel Lee.
Daniel Lee is most likely in L.A. because this, okay. I think this is a long-distance phone call.
Right.
And Bruce is in Hong Kong. And later in the phone call, which we're definitely going to not get to today, he talks about, you know, making Fist of Fury and the other movies and things like that. And you know, mentions Thai boxing as well and things like that. So, yeah, I think that for our first episode, that's probably going to be enough because we can't... because the next topic, I think he starts talking about movies next. That's like a whole other thing. And we need to save some stuff for our full Crime Faces report on the Tai Chi versus White Crane fight. So for those of you out there who are you know, listening to us for the first time, definitely thank you for joining us. We're on YouTube right now, but we're going to be on iTunes and Android very shortly. So if you're new to the podcast, please don't forget to smash that like button.
Please smash hard.
Subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius. Hit that bell for notifications and stay tuned for when we're on iTunes and Android and all that stuff. And also for those of you who are Dudes of Kung Fu fans, like the Dudes of Kung Fu Facebook page because I will still be doing live Dudes of Kung Fu episodes about every 5 to 6 weeks on there as well. So,
we'll this see is you guys a to there. Be continued.
This is definitely a to be continued. All right. So thank you guys. We'll be in touch. We'll see you guys next time. Alex. Word is